huge news, years in the making, my brand new book that my publishers refuse to publish, Money Matrix. Beat the money system and build generational wealth. Understand the three main ways that the banks productize you and make money from you. You'll be able to turn that system against itself, build generational wealth and multiple streams of recurring income. It's all at moneymatrix.cash. And if you're quick, the first few hundred registrants and buyers will receive many special bonuses from me. The brand new Moneymaker Summit 3-day special event. Meet me at a champagne reception. Meet me at a multi-millionaire networking dinner. Go now, moneymatrix.cash. This is huge.
Welcome to the Disruptive Entrepreneur Podcast.
What does the word disruptive mean to you?
It means going beyond the ordinary, going beyond the status quo.
Not thinking in the conventional way, not just sort of following the herd.
Disruptive means shaking things up, you know?
Disruptive entrepreneur is somebody who sees the problem and embraces the problem with a new way.
Shake up and awakening.
Quality will take care of itself, and you'll go from being disruptive, but also profitable.
When you use your own reservoir of talent, when you love what you do, then you disrupt.
Mix it up, change it up, and dominate.
And now, your host, 8 times best-selling author and double world record holder, Rob Moore.
Hi, it's Rob Moore here, and welcome to the Disruptive Entrepreneur Podcast. Very excited with this interview. I think you're going to love it. It actually quite surprised me. Now, I'll be honest, I was a little bit on the fence about doing this one initially, not because of the interviewee, but because I've done quite a lot of fitness-themed podcasts or podcasts with fitness people. But people seem to be loving those more than many of my other podcasts. So bear with me. I'll tell you his name in a minute. I think you're going to love this. But one thing that's really surprising me is I'm getting a lot of courtship from a lot of these guests. So if you listen to a lot of the interviews I'm doing, I'm getting invited over to America. This chap here, he invited me over to his house to come and meet some of his real estate friends. I got invited by a billionaire when he came back to the UK to come and hang out with him for a few hours and take him out for burger and lobster. So you'll notice in this interview, it kind of chats me up and asks me out a bit. This is pretty cool. So he is the founder of Spartan Death Races. So Spartan races are extreme terrain marathons. They're known for being some of the most extreme in the world. In fact, he had one race which was the most extreme in the world. But then he learned how to commercialize it. And he does this now for literally millions of people. They've exploded in popularity all over the world. I believe he has something like 200 events in 40 countries across the world. So the chap I'm about to introduce you to is Joe DeSena. Now, we talk a lot about growing his business, scaling his business. He had quite a few years where it was hard for him. And I think that'll inspire you if you're going through some challenge. I think you're going to love this interview, so no more preamble from me. But one thing I will say is we have got loads of interviews coming up. We've got some really interesting, inspiring, huge people, UFC fighters, owner of some of the biggest gym franchises in the world, some big celebrities, England rugby captains, you name it, we've got it. So this podcast is really going places. Thank you for your support. Thank you for being a listener and a fan. Anyway, remember, if you don't risk anything, you risk everything. Hi, it's Rob Moore here, and welcome to the Disruptive Entrepreneur Podcast and live video. I'm very excited to have Joe DeSena here. Have I pronounced your surname right? I'm very English, Joe. Is it Joe DeSena? Joe DeSena?
Joe DeSena.
DeSena. There you go. I got them both wrong. Joe, thanks for giving me your time today to do the podcast. Very grateful.
Thanks for having me.
And we were thinking of a title that might make a lot of people interested in watching this video and listening to this podcast. And we've decided to write Death Race Psycho Interviewed Live. And I want to know why someone will do what you do to your body in your life. Why would you even do it? Why would you put yourself to the limits of endurance?
So, you know, I was reading an article in the Washington Post the other day in the U.S. about two young children, an 8-year-old and a 10-year-old boy. You're going to love this. Back when Teddy Roosevelt was president, okay, Roosevelt had a friend that lived in Oklahoma. Let's call it 1,500 miles away. And that friend had these two boys, the 8-year-old and the 10-year-old. And he told his boys, I'm gonna take a train. I'm going to go see Teddy. If you kids want to come, you ride your horses and meet me there. 1,500 miles, 8-year-old and 10-year-old boys. They rode their horses. It became like a national thing where the entire country was gripped, reading the paper each day to see how the boys were doing. And they made it. And the reason I bring that up to answer the question is, it was pretty normal for most of our existence on this planet. Let's say we've been on a planet for a million years. For 99.999% of the time we've been here, that's the way we lived. We had some tough days, right? We didn't have food on demand. I just asked for a tea. My wife sent me over a tea. It wasn't like that, right? You had to go climb a mountain to get those plants. And then to start a fire was pretty epic, right? You didn't have a pot handed to you or even a cup, right? So my point is, we have it pretty easy. And so, although I'd love to pat myself on the back and say, oh, I'm a badass, when you ask that question, like, why do you do these hard things? Are they really that hard? Like, every mile, there's a water station. Are you kidding me? It's not that hard. To the gym, there's an air conditioner. Not that hard. So, you know, the other day, I dropped my kids off 4 miles from the house. I told them, get out of the car. They said, why? I said, figure out your own way home. Right? My wife thought I was nuts, but like, how is the kid expected to do well outside the house if you don't get him outside the house? So why do I do these things? Because that's what animals do, and we're animals. You're an animal, I'm an animal. But we forgot we're animals. And so I didn't forget, you forgot.
Definitely forgot I'm an animal. So is there a certain amount of pleasure out of defeating hard things?
Well, I think the brain and the body is wired to thrive when you do hard things, when you take cold showers, when you sweat, when you have... Listen, I used to clean swimming pools, okay? You're going to like this analogy. A swimming pool, on average, is about 20,000 gallons of water. Human body, let's call it 13 gallons of water. 20,000, 13 gallons, okay? Swimming pool has a pump and a filter. Human body has a pump and some filters. If I took a swimming pool, I used to clean swimming pools. I used to clean 700 swimming pools. If I took a swimming pool, 20,000 gallons of water, and I threw French fries and coffee and syrup and all the shit we eat and drink on a daily basis, and I put it in the pool, and I didn't run the pump, and I didn't clean the filter, the pool turns green. So when you ask the question, is there an amount of pleasure you get from this? It's like, I don't want to pay the electricity on running the pump and cleaning, you know, the pool, but I don't want to swim in a green fucking swimming pool. So like, you don't do this stuff, what do you expect the outcome to be? That water that you're drinking, that's clean, right? And so that's, I don't know, that's the way I want to treat myself. I worked out this morning, I was exhausted, I sweated, I got in the sauna, I took an ice cold shower. I feel pretty fucking good. Mm.
But you could do that without doing a death race, couldn't you? I mean, death race.
Oh, the death race, is it really that hard? I mean, let me tell you, last year, the year before, I was so annoyed with all these races that had popped up on the global circuit where it's like, oh, this race is so hard, that marathon, this ultra marathon. And I said, guys, we invented this. We invented hard, right, when it comes to the modern day events. So let's go back to our roots and let's throw the hammer down and really show people what hard is. And so the race started with like almost 70 miles of carrying your body weight up and over a mountain. Pretty hard. But again, if you and I were trying to go across England back, you know, 100 years ago, is that big a deal? 70 something miles. We would have said that was a gift to go 70 something. I was in Fiji. OK, I was in the interior of Fiji, and where there's no televisions, no automobiles, no roads. And it would be very normal for a barefoot man with a machete to go 20 or 30 miles just to get to the next village and say hello to his buddies. So anyway, they carried their weight up and over a mountain, first part of the race. They got to our farm in Vermont. I made them do 3,000 burpees. After 3,000 burpees, they did a 26.2-mile barbed wire crawl. After a 26.2-mile barbed wire crawl, they did 26.2-mile rope climb. And it took about 72 hours. And so you say, well, Joe, why would you do that? Well, let me tell you, everybody that completed that course was transformed. And again, it wasn't as hard as living 100 years ago on the planet. So there's, you know, if you want to turn iron into steel, you got to heat it, you got to pound it, and you got to drown it. And so I heat, pound, and drown people.
I love it. So when you say people were transformed, what was the transformation?
Well, you get to meet yourself. How often do you get to meet yourself, right? You only meet yourself under really strenuous circumstances. You don't meet yourself on the way to McDonald's in the morning for a coffee. You meet yourself when your back's against the wall and you've given everything you got. And all of a sudden, this guy, Joe, says, hey, do 3,000 burpees. I'll see you in the morning. Right? You find out what you're made of. Are you willing to go the distance? Because don't forget, everybody should go through some sort of rite of passage. If you had a Ferrari sitting in the garage, it would be a shame if it never left the garage. Take it out on the track. See what it's got, right?
Yeah.
Run it as hard as you can around the curves. And so that's what you're doing.
Yeah. Okay. So you said you get to meet yourself. So who are you, Joe? When you meet yourself, who are you?
You know, I didn't think I was tough enough. That was my issue growing up, right? Like I grew up in a neighborhood where they were all organized crime guys, where people going to jail, people getting killed. And as a young boy with my friends and cousins, you want to be that. You want to have that nice car. You want to roll the cash in your pocket. You want that respect, that nice suit. And I just didn't know. You know, there were some kids that just naturally woke up in the morning and wanted to punch people in the face. I didn't know if I had. I didn't know if I had that. And so I had to test myself. I think like we all do. And could I build my own business? Could I work on Wall Street? Could I go 1,000 miles by foot in the snow? And so it was probably for me finding out who I was. And what I found was that I'm not the fastest, definitely not the toughest, not the brightest, but I don't quit. Don't quit. And so I created that narrative in my mind. And I think everybody wants to quit a little less. Everybody'd like to wake up a little earlier, get a little more done. Mm. That's who I am.
Yeah. Okay. Love that. So it seems to me, I'm a big fan of turning what you love into what you do. And I think it's a myth that you have to sell your life doing a job you don't like just to pay bills. I think it's possible for everyone to have the dream and the reality of doing what you love and loving what you do and merging your passion with your profession. And you own a business and a brand, businesses and brands. And it sounds to me like it's what you do day in, day out anyway. So you seem to be someone who has managed to merge this passion and profession and monetize what you also love to do yourself. So one, have I got that right? And two, if I have, how can other people do that?
Well, I'll tell you, for most of my life, my first business was when I was, pre-teens. And that was just an exploration, could I even start a business? That was exciting. What was I capable of doing this, collecting money? My second business was, could I play with the big boys and finance on Wall Street? And during that time, during those 20 years, I didn't really know anything about purpose, or I just wanted to make some money. I just wanted to get ahead. I wanted to see, if I could play at that level. When I found this business, which was by accident, and I started getting emails from people and having communication face to face with people that said, hey, you changed my life. I transformed. I'm back with my husband. I'm back with my wife. I lost weight. I got through cancer. I no longer do drugs. I no longer drink. Like, I thought to myself, holy shit, I get paid to do this? It's unbelievable. And I found purpose, to your point. And let me tell you, you get paid with that. You don't even need the money. It beats money, all day, every day. So, but it's very hard to find your purpose. And I think what happens to people is they sit around and they don't do anything. And you hear them say, I'm trying to figure out what I want to do. I'm trying to find my way. And what I would say to those people is, you got to get moving. You got to do. Mm. And while you're doing, you just bump into things like I did and probably you did. Everybody that's moving and active and getting shit done should, in most cases, find something that they really love, because it's not just about the money. And when you do, it's awesome.
Yeah, I completely agree with you there, Joe. I think a lot of people, it's called finding your purpose, but they're not looking, they're waiting. And I think it sounds like you started a business pre-teens. So, you know, Spartan and Death Race and your brands now, they may have been your third try, your fourth try, your fifth try. Some people, it's their 10th try. So I think you should be looking for your purpose, seeking out your purpose, hunting for your purpose. I interviewed the CEO of Netflix yesterday, and that was his sixth startup, Netflix, not his first. I think there's a big myth. Oh, well, if I wait and ask a few questions, my purpose will come to me. No, you've got to go fucking find it and test some stuff and fail at a few things first, possibly.
Yeah. I agree 100%.
Okay, great. So True North, something I've researched you to talk about a bit, or you have a sort of a definition of that. What does that mean and why does it matter?
So that's really the purpose that we're talking about here, and finding that thing that's going to pull you through life. And by the way, it can change. I mean, in those early years, I was probably looking to measure up. That was my true north. You know, was I tough enough? The second decade of my business career was money. My true north was money. How much money can I make? And then, you know, I met my wife, found the farm, started having kids, and then stumbled upon this idea of Spartan. And it became, it's this. I mean, I'd love to start every board meeting. My board members aren't always up for this. I'm starting to get them to agree to it. And which is, let's measure our success every quarter and how many lives we changed, not how many dollars we made or lost. Right. And so I think your true north can change. One way for people out there to try to hone in on what their true north might be, you know, if somebody says, what would you do if it was your last day on earth? Which I think is a cool question. Or what would you do if you had all the money in the world? Another great question. But the one I like is, what would you do if you knew you'd fail anyway at it? I was failing for 15 years with Spartan. I couldn't get it to work, but I just loved doing it. And so that must be my true north, right? And so if you're failing at it and you're struggling. I met a guy the other day, came to me looking for some investment, who has a very healthy energy drink. And I said, how long you at it? And he said, about 7 years. How you doing? Terrible. I'm losing money 7 years, you know, but I'm not quitting. And I said, well, there, this guy found his true north. I mean, he loves it. He might not have found a place where he's going to grow his bank account, but he found his true north.
And do you think if you keep going north long enough on your true north, you'll figure it out in the end?
I think so. I think if you're open-minded and willing to pivot, I've had a lot of pivots. You probably had a lot of pivots. Along the way. I mean, we started with death race type events. And the reality is, I know this is shocking to you in the audience, but the reality is not a lot of people want to do those. And so so there's not an economic model where you can make enough money or even be sustainable putting on death races or, you know, anything beyond what we do today. But we pivoted. We although it was my true north and I loved it and I love changing lives, I listened to the marketplace. I stayed true to myself, but I pivoted and we changed the name. We went to 3 miles, 8 miles, and 13 miles, and all of a sudden people were more interested. You go from 3,000 burpees to 30 and there's a bigger audience.
Yeah. And if you went to 3, then I'd be in as well. So
there you go.
Hi, it's Rob. Now, I've got a really quick and very exciting announcement to make. So stay with me because I've been getting loads of questions about this and it's quite urgent. So I launched my Facebook supporter program a few months ago. You pay a tiny subscription and you get new content, meetups, WhatsApp group access, Ask Me Anything Lives, and various other new or non-released supporters only content. And what I did about 2 months ago is we launched our very first challenge. Now, dozens of people made 5 grand, 10 grand, 15 grand. The winner made £27,000 in cash, proven cash, not just invoices, cash, in 6 days. So coming very soon is the second cash challenge, which I've made 8 days and I've updated and improved and I've got a plan for. So if you want to jump in on that challenge and get the plan and be a bit early, you'll need to go to bit.ly/RobSupporter with a capital R. That's bit.ly/RobSupporter with a capital R. It's an unbelievable program for just literally a medium skinny cappuccino, extra shot with almond milk and not too much milk. It's exactly the same price as one of those. I've got £20,500 plus VAT of prizes I'm going to give away, including 6 month access to me on WhatsApp as a personal mentorship. So bit.ly/RobSupporter with a capital R. Great. So now back to the interview. So something interesting, and you said it twice, so I'd love to explore this, Joe, is you said by accident, so you fell into Spartan and your brands by accident, and then you said stumbled upon. What was that accident and the stumble upon that set it all in motion?
You know, I have a good friend who is the CEO of Saks Fifth Avenue. I don't know if you guys know Saks Fifth Avenue over there. He's done extremely well. And every time he likes to call me at 5 a.m. I think there's very few people up at 5 a.m. And I'm usually doing burpees. And I said to him the other day, I said, man, you are so lucky. And he said, you know, Joe, he goes, you make your own luck. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, look, if you're in, he goes, you're looking at a football, you guys call it football, a soccer game, right? And you see that player that is always at the right place at the right time. And they're just good, right? And they're just always ready for that moment. And his argument was, as long as you're doing that, as long as you're putting yourself in the right place over and over and over, luck happens. And to the untrained eye, and even in my case, right, I said it to you, it might look like luck, but it's just you weren't sitting on the couch. You're always putting yourself in that right position. Me being up at 5 a.m., if you think about it, unlike his other friends, causes my phone to ring. And so now I got a multi-billionaire on the phone with me, right? Like, which puts me in the right place. And I end up in a meeting with him yesterday in front of other people. And so, so it's probably less luck than I describe. But with Spartan, the reason I use those terms is, wasn't really looking for another business. I just wanted to put on a race as a fun day. And then, it just got, actually what happened was I put on a fun race and I put on another race, put on another race. There were all the death race style races and people weren't showing up and I was losing money. And I had dug myself such a financial hole. I had put so much money into this hobby. It was irresponsible that I had no choice but to continue to get myself out of the hole. So here's an interesting rabbit hole for us to go down, you and I, because on our farm in Vermont, when I met my wife, we bought a farm, we started this thing. On the farm, I thought, you know what, I'm going to find entrepreneurs like yourself, like me, that are young, that are hungry, and I'm going to remove some of the obstacles for them. I'm going to take away the mortgage that you or I would have to be, you know, have if you started your business. Take away the fact they got to go lease a vehicle. Take away the fact they got to go buy cows or inventory in the general store. And I'll supply all that. I'm going to make it easy for them and find those hungry, young entrepreneurs, put them in these positions of running the general store, running the wedding business, or running the farm. And they're going to thrive because I took away all the obstacles that anybody else would have had. They all failed. And when I studied it over a period of time, like, why would they fail? They failed because I think part of the reason you're successful is you have no choice. Your back's against the wall, and you've sold your children, you've borrowed, right? You did everything you had to do, and you have no choice but to succeed. And my wife's over there. My wife's awesome, by the way. If I don't give her a plug, she's going to hit me with something.
And that makes her awesome, does it?
Yes. And now that we have, she wanted me to point out, now that we have successful people in the general store, on the farm, running the wedding business, to give them a plug, but yes, they're great people running those businesses for us, but they invested money. As soon as we changed the rules and they had to put money in, boom, the businesses became successful.
Well, because there's accountability, do you think?
There's accountability. There's a gun to your head.
Yeah.
Like everybody would quit everything. If there was no consequence to not waking up early, right, and getting to work, who the hell would wake up early? And go, like, but for me, I changed the story. And like, for you, it sounds like you don't like burpees and pushing yourself to that limit, which is fine. For me, I changed the story. And so the outcome of not waking up early, of not sweating, of not, is worse, right, than staying in bed. So that's why I do it. You haven't gotten to that spot yet.
Not in your world, but I love getting rejected every day in my world. And, you know, and I love reaching out to loads of guests and having them say no. And I love, you know, trying to push my work out to the world and having people turn me down and critique me and troll me and stand against me and tell me I can't do it. So I probably have my own version of 3,000 burpees.
Right.
And I do press-ups. I do press-ups every day as well. I might not look like it, but I do that as well. So.
You look good. You look like Christian Bale. Doing everything.
Right, that's it. We're ending the interview now. We're just going to keep that one. It's going to be that Christian Bale, man. Not an American Psycho, though. Not that kind. Cool. So you said you had quite a few pivots. I'm fascinated by this because I think a lot of people think, oh, well, I've got to get my business perfect and then that's going to be my business. And of course, most successful business stories like Netflix, they used to post DVDs out. No one does that anymore. So what were some of your pivots that enabled you to move to what you are now?
Yeah, you know, well, one was certainly going from that long, crazy distance event that nobody wanted. Two, and this is a big one. This is, and a lot of people might not think this is important, but the name. We didn't start with that name, Spartan. We started with a name called Peak, also a cool name. We had peak.com, but that just didn't inspire the fire in everybody's belly. But that word Spartan is powerful. Mm. It's powerful across any country you go to. The obstacles, when we first started, we didn't actually build these obstacles of a spear throw and a rope climb. And they were natural obstacles in the beginning. It was kayaking, biking, running, except barbed wire. And as soon as we standardized the format that was military inspired, that tended to change things. But along the way, all these changes I was hesitant to make because I'm a human being and human beings don't like change. And so I it was against my ethos to drop it from, you know, 350 miles to 3. But
you sound so disappointed that happened.
I had a tough time with that one, but yeah. I got through it. And then the world changed too. It wasn't just us pivoting. Social media started to play a role in the picture that wasn't around back in 2001 when we started this. So that was big. The fact that the world was coming out of all these wars in the Middle East and veterans were coming back home helped us because they were seeking community. CrossFit. Became really big, so that helped. So I think it's not only the entrepreneur pivoting, but you got to pay attention to what the environment too. And we got, you know, I hate to say it again, we got lucky that the environmental changes were in our favor. And I just wouldn't quit. You know, I lost money for 15 years. This thing's 20 years old, so I lost money for 15 years. And who does that?
I was just going to say, why? Why?
Who does that? I just don't like to quit, and I loved it. Yeah, my wife just said I loved it. And I was fortunate. I still had the Wall Street business for 10 of those 15 years of losing. So I had the money. But 10 years in, I just said, I just can't do this anymore. And I was tracked. She's feeling, you don't need me. I'm really just a pretty face here.
I just want to stress something you've said, Joe, because I think it's really important. I think there's this fine balance between what you've got a dying, burning passion for and what the world needs. And it sounds like you've managed to merge those two together. The world doesn't need 350-mile races. If it did, you'd be the king of that. And you've had to find a way to still bring your Spartan ethos, but put it in a way that the world needs, where you can survive as a business. Because if you can't make money, because you can't lose money for 25 years, otherwise you have to wind it up. So at some point you have to make money. And then I know you love to serve, but you can't serve unless you make money. And if you make money, you can serve more people. And I think that understanding that balance is really important for business owners.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. It's not... What's the word I'm looking for? It's not a luxury to make money. It's a necessity.
Yeah.
So, and it sucks in some ways, right? You could appreciate this because It's that accountability. It's that word you used. It's this business would, any business would be so much easier, right? If you didn't have to make money.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but money makes the world go round, and money also money enables you to grow, further investment. You know, bringing in money brings in other people's advice. It means you can scale. It means you can go global. It means you can design better races, hire more people. So I do sometimes think what I found really interesting was you had these decades in your life where one decade was about, can I level up in business? Another decade was about making money. Another decade was about, you know, serving and helping as many people as you can. Well, maybe the lesson could be, well, we can do all those three things at the same time.
You could. I just didn't know it.
Mm.
Right. I didn't know that I loved this. I was living in Queens, and just across the river was Manhattan, and that's where the big boys were playing in finance. And I didn't know if I could even get there. As I rewind the clock and think about the question you just, like, if you can go back in time and I was 10, 11 years old, I would have combined all three, no doubt about it. But you know what? I mean, Wall Street was fun in its own way to do that. Mixing cement and putting down brick patios and cleaning swimming pools for mobsters, that was cool. But this is a lot more fun.
Yeah. And I think that's the great purpose of conversations like this. It took you 3 years to figure out the three things: leveling up, making money, serving and helping people and finding your purpose. And now people listen to you, and it might not take them 30 years. It might take them 3 years or 3 months. And that's surely the purpose of having these kind of conversations.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. Now what I would caution against, I don't know if you agree with this or not, because it's against the business you and I are in, is it's not good enough to listen to a podcast. It's not good enough to read a book. It's not good enough to go to a seminar, because in many cases, people are just putting off actually doing the work.
Mm.
Right. And so I subscribe to fire, ready, aim. Because if you sit around and you aim and then you fire, and right, like, you never get it done. You never go. And so I'd rather just start, get moving. And while you're working your way towards that thing, then you read a book. Listen to a book. Don't sit around. You could be one of these perennial podcast listeners, and right? Like, you just don't do
it. A podcast.
Right?
Yeah, true.
I have a podcast too. My wife's saying you can't say that when you're on a podcast, but listen.
You can say whatever you want.
The reason you and I are doing it is people get off their ass and actually do stuff.
Mm.
But I think the majority of people don't do. I mean, listen, it's a very small percentage of people actually start businesses and actually do things. So listen to the podcast on your way.
Yes.
Right?
On your run.
On your run.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I wrote a book called Start Now, Get Perfect Later, which I think is like the, you know, fire, ready, aim. Yeah. I agree. I mean, I completely agree with you. You're not going to get fit or rich just listening to podcasts and audiobooks. But there are a lot of people also that aren't educating themselves well enough either and don't realize the great gift of audiobooks and podcasts and following people like you on social media and getting good advice from you from a distance. And the great thing about podcasts is can merge the two, because people can listen to you on a run and go a bit faster. I interviewed David Goggins, and people are always telling me, I listen to that podcast with David Goggins and I run a bit faster and I run a bit longer. So that's also the gift, isn't it?
Yeah, but I would say for me personally, and I think for most people, going back to if you weren't on the move, right, you could actually get talked out of doing that thing. Like when I think back to those three sections of my life, if I had more knowledge, if you existed as a podcaster back then and I listened to you, I might not have actually started my first two businesses, right? Because it was certainly not my third business. I lost money for 15 years. Any podcast I would have listened to would have told me to stop doing it. So I think too much knowledge could be dangerous, right? But if you start and you got the gun to your head and you're on the hook, then start listening.
Yeah, that's a good point, because people sometimes do say to me, oh, I've listened to a load of podcasts, I've listened to a load of audiobooks, and yeah, too many mentors, too much advice, because it can be conflicting. Someone can say left, some can say right. And yeah, there's definitely a certain amount of you've got to figure it as you go, on the go.
Figure it out as you go, on the go. I like that.
Yeah. Great. So I heard you lost $500,000 in an adventure race. Is that true?
I did. I lost $500,000 in the first race we put on, British Virgin Islands, 2001. September 11th happened, and we shouldn't have continued, but I wasn't going to let that stop me. And we put it on. We took a hit. And then it was all downhill from there. I just kept losing money, digging a deeper hole. In 2010, let's say I was down, who knows how much, $5 million, $7 million. I wasn't even keeping track. It was so idiotic. I was done. I couldn't spend any more money on this thing. And that's when we pivoted, changed the name to Spartan, and changed it to an obstacle course race, 3 miles, 8 miles, 13 miles. And I swore to myself, we were only going to invest $50,000. That was it. I'd lost too much money. I was going to take one more crack at this under the new name, the new discipline, 50 grand. And, you know, that first race, like 700 people showed up. I was lucky if in the whole prior decade I had 700 people race. Right?
Wow.
So I said, oh, wow, there's something here. And then, you know, 1,300 people showed up, and then 2,000. But being that I wasn't listening to podcasts at the time, and I had no knowledge of actually how to build a consumer-facing brand, I stupidly went from putting on a race in Vermont to putting on one in New York. The third race was in, I think, Montreal. The fourth race was in the UK. The fifth race was in Slovakia. And so you would never do that. There's lots of smart people that have been guests on your show that would say, Joe, you build a foundation in one location, and you build rings out from that location. But I didn't know that because, again, I wasn't listening to podcasts or reading books. And but what I will say is I lost a ton of money well beyond the $50,000 because of that idiotic move. But what ultimately happened was we built this network effect. And, you know, a couple of years later, I woke up one morning and it was like all of a sudden the world knew about Spartan. And so it was a very inefficient way to get there, but we ultimately got there.
I'm fascinated because what I don't want people to think on this podcast is you have to be losing money for 15 years before you make money. Because I don't think everyone does that. So what went wrong? Obviously, you didn't give up and you turned it around, and that's great. But giving yourself advice, how could you not lose money for 15 years? How could you only lose money for 3 years or 2 years or a lot less time? What could you do differently?
I just want you to know how disciplined I am before I answer that question. I have a bowl of like a veggie soup next to me that I have not touched. That I'm just smelling it and I want it, but I'm not touching it because you're such a good host.
So, thank you. Do you want to have some now?
No. I don't want to eat on the show. I don't want to be disrespectful.
Okay.
So I would say if I had to do it all over again, first of all, this is the most important thing for people to listen to, is I was distracted. I had a main business that I was running, my where I was earning my income, the Wall Street trading firm. You can't split yourself. If you're going to do something, you got to do it. You know, I got this mantra now. I wish I learned. Actually, my mother was preaching it 40 years ago. I just didn't listen to her. Like when I close my eyes and I go to bed, this would be great for everybody. As I say to myself, you know, if you're going to sleep, sleep. And I don't let my mind run all around. I say, if I'm going to sleep, sleep. And if I'm going to do a podcast, right? And if I'm going to read, read. And if I'm going to eat, eat. And I'm not great at it, but I think the lesson there is if I was going to put on adventure races and Spartan races or obstacle races, put on adventure races and obstacle races. Don't be running a business on Wall Street and doing all these other things. I had the farm, the general store, the wedding business. So I was completely distracted. The business only got 10% of my time. So in retrospect, I deserve to lose money. Number one. Number two, I reversed my entire statement earlier. I hadn't gained any knowledge. I didn't listen to any podcasts or read any books. Right? But books certainly existed back then, but the podcasts were not as popular. You couldn't consume information as easily. Three, which is part of number two, is I didn't seek out somebody who had built a consumer face. You know, sometimes when we're successful in a business, we assume that we're successful at everything. So I was successful in the pool business. I was successful on Wall Street, but that doesn't mean I should be successful at this. So like, I should have sought out, I should have hired somebody that had done this before. Right. But because of number one, because I was distracted and it was just a side thing, I probably didn't want to invest in this thing. I didn't take it seriously, enough. I never really put pen to paper. Number four, I never really got a giant whiteboard out and said, what the hell is the strategy here? What's the goal? What's the size of the market? Is there 5,000 people that would do this stuff? Is there 50,000, 5 million? What's the size of the market? Again, because I was distracted and I wasn't focused on it. I'll tell you the fifth one, the most important one, was I had too much money to burn. Like if you think about it, right, and that's why I don't like raising money. A lot of people, I don't know if you agree with this or not, but they go out there and they raise a bunch of money and you get sloppy.
Yeah, I do agree with it. I think that staying lean teaches you good process. There are many other resources than cash out there, like hustle, like leverage, like contacts, like social media, like collaborations. I teach people how to buy property, and I've got quite a few hundred properties, and I've never put a deposit down for one of them. I didn't start with any money, so I didn't have a choice. If I'd have had a 200 or 300 grand, I'd have spent it on property and made all the mistakes. So yeah, sometimes having money is a curse because you just rely on the money as your only resource. Whereas if you don't have money, you have to rely on other resources. And you'll see with what you do, human beings are very resourceful when they have to be.
I love, you know what? It's so simple what you just said, and clearly it was on my mind, but I haven't verbalized it that well. So you're giving me an idea because we're working on 2020 budgets right now. And I need to go back to my teams, certainly my marketing team, where we've got a giant bucket of money, which was even a bigger bucket of money until I cut it back. Just to give you an idea, our marketing budget, I cut back by, just doing the math here quick in my head, by $8 million, just on paper to say, hey guys, you have $8 million less next year to spend. And based on the sentence that you just threw at me, I'm going to go back to them when I hang up with you. And I'm going to say, guys, I want you to show me other resources like hustle, right? Like this, like that, because in the early days, I didn't have that kind of money to spend on marketing, but you figure it out. And so I like that a lot. And I think people out there listening or watching this, I love being under the gun. Now, you know, there's a flip side to that. The flip side is, if you don't have enough money, you might not build infrastructure and so forth. But that goes both ways, right? When I think back to our early days with Spartan, certainly I should have had a CRM. Certainly I should have built all the proper infrastructure, technology, et cetera. I'm in technology debt right now. But the other side is we didn't really know what we needed. You know what I mean? You find out later what you need. So, by the way, I know I'm talking a lot. I apologize, but I've met a bunch of property guru, successful people like yourself recently. I think we should get all you guys together in one place. You're invited to the farm. We should have like a, I don't know, what would you call it? Like almost like an organized crime property syndicate.
I'm in. We'll
let's
come.
Do that.
Yeah, I'm in.
The reason it's interesting to me is because my dad was doing what all you guys do back in the 70s. He ultimately failed. He crashed and burned in the late 80s, early 90s when the property market took a dive. And so I've got it in my bones. I used to go around and collect rents for him. I saw him get properties repossessed by the banks. I mean, interest rates at one time. Like, it was just a different time. So we should pull that off. We should do that.
Okay. Let me know when and where. I'm over. Yeah. Okay. So, I'd love to get a few of your business lessons. I know you're most known for the fitness and the death race and the Spartan side of it, but obviously you've grown a very successful business. And I've got a lot of people who are in the fitness business that follow me, but more people who are entrepreneurs. Before I do that, And I'll do my own research and I'll put this in the intro anyway for you, Joe. But could you just give us a little bit of top line about your companies, maybe the turnover, the countries you're in, the amount of people that do a race every year? Because I don't think people get how big scale your companies are.
Yeah, and Spartan, we're talking about Spartan.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Spartan is now it's 45 countries. It's 275 events. It's 1.3 million people per year go through the system. There's 6.6 million people to date have done a Spartan race. And then the ancillary revenue sources, as you could imagine, are merchandise, sponsorship. We're getting into nutrition. I told you about Spartan tea and stuff. Podcasts, you probably make money with a podcast. I don't make any money because I'm an idiot. We write books. I don't make any money with books. I haven't figured any of that stuff out. But really it's race entries, it's merchandise, sponsorship, and some nutrition. And then the big one I'm missing, the big hole in our business is training. Like I think from the outside, you would say, hey, Joe, you should have a massive training business. Orange Theory, SoulCycle, all those guys should not be as big as Spartan because of our footprint globally. We just don't have time to get to it. So we're actually talking to a bunch of potential partners to help us. I know exactly what a Spartan gym, physical gym should look like. And I think it would blow people away, it would blow their minds. I just don't have, how many things can I do?
Yeah.
Now a typical person will spend, you know, $100 to $125 to sign up for a race, which is too cheap. Quite honestly, I mean, you're going to sign up for London Marathon, New York Marathon, you're probably going to pay $250, and Ironman, you're going to pay $750. And I'm not saying this, this is not hubris when I say this, but like the experience you get with us dwarfs that. And to put on a Spartan race, for us to build a course with 6 tractor trailers on the side of a mountain while it's raining, right? Anybody out there who's done a kitchen renovation, I bet you've done a couple of them. Imagine doing like 30 kitchen renovations on the side of a mountain while it's raining, because that's what we do. And we've got trucks and bulldozers and backhoes and forklifts, and we got to make sure everybody's safe. And I got 1,000 volunteers I have to manage that show up to help pull this whole thing off. So $100 to $125 is like completely mispriced.
Why don't you put your prices up then?
You know, part of me is the mission, right? I am saying I want to change 100 million lives. The other part of me is, Ironman's been around 40 years, New York Marathon, Tokyo, they've been around forever. I don't know if the market's ready to pay a little more, but oh my God, my life would be easier if everybody paid $5 more, $10 more. It would be a hell of a lot easier.
What's $5 more? That's what, 4%? 3-4%.
I just do the math this way, right? $5 more on 1.3 million is like $6.5 million. So it would certainly pay to feed my parrot. And
do you think you'd lose any of those people if you put your price up $5?
Yeah, I don't have the price elasticity yet on the brand, which is shocking because the brand name is 2,500 years old. But, you know, like I said, New York Marathon's been around 40 years. And those first decades for marathons or Ironman, those were considered freaks, those people. It was not as sticky as it is today. And so I just think we need more time.
Yeah.
Okay. I need to be on more podcasts like this.
Yeah. All right, cool. Do you know what? Fuck it, I'm going to say it, Joe. Because I didn't think it was my right to say it, but I'm going to say it. I think you should put your price up $5. I think you should seriously consider that, because I don't, sitting here with your brand and your mission and your passion about it, do I think someone would, oh yeah, I'm in at $125, but I'm not in at $130. No way are they going to turn that down. And if you're saying my life and business would be a lot easier if I had $6-7 million, and I guess you're probably going to reinvest a lot of that, then you get to reach your 100 million users a bit quicker.
Well, what we would do if we did that, as I listen to you, is I'm going to put a picture of you, right? That extra $5, I'm going to call it. Yeah. $5 charge after you. We have a business guru out of the UK that recommended this extra $5 charge. If you're pissed off, get in touch with him.
Yeah, do it. Do it. I don't care. I live in England. I don't care. And you've got a fall guy as well if it all goes wrong.
I want you to raise rents by $100 a month.
Ah, but that's a much bigger percentage. I'd put rents up 5% a year. Sorry?
What's your average rent?
Oh, on a single dwelling, maybe 800 US English pounds a month. So what's 4% of that? Less.
Yeah.
It's not 100 quid, is it? It's a few pounds. I think I'd probably aim to have rents put up minimum 3-5% a year. 5% a year, probably try. Here's the thing as well. When you put price up incrementally, it's less of a shock than when you wait a few years and then put it up a lot.
Yeah, I would love, if I could go up 5% a year, that would be, the other thing is we're extremely generous. Like I tell everybody, all your audience, by the way, if anybody ever has a money issue, if that's the reason they're not doing it, just send me an email, right? joe@spartan.com. I'll give you a free raise. Like it's never, that's not the issue, but I hear your advice, and who knows, some changes might be coming. So if the global community is furious and they want to lynch me, I'm giving them one of your 100 addresses.
All right, then, fine. Yeah, do it. So I don't give advice. It's suggestions, not advice. I'm glad I said it. It's out there. Because actually, I wouldn't say if I didn't believe it. So,
yep.
Okay, so you've got a few income streams. I'm a big believer in having multiple streams of income. I'm not a believer in doing 58 things and being good at none of them, but I'm a big believer in multiple streams of income because I believe that if you have one income stream and it gets disrupted or you don't want to do it anymore or you get fired. And so was that an intentional thing? The merchandise, the sponsorships, are you thinking I need multiple income streams?
It's so funny. I was really fortunate. I don't know if you had this in your household as a kid, but my dad was way ahead of his time. Not just saying it because he was my smart guy, tons of real estate. You know, for a Queens guy, you'll appreciate this. Back in the late 70s, 80s, he had about $17 million in real estate.
Wow.
A big deal,
yeah.
Back then. Right? Same kind of thing, levered up. And then everything went south. And the reason it went south was he had one client in his business that was his cash flow business, which was air freight. One client, IBM was his client. And he used to talk about it at the table, at the dinner table. And I really absorbed it, which was you can't just have one revenue stream, right? And it didn't mean anything until he lost it. And when he lost it, that sentence really became powerful. And then he couldn't fund the mortgage payments on the houses and all the redevelopment he was trying to do. And so one by one, he lost all that property. And another rule he had, you'll appreciate, is the house you live in, you should never have a mortgage on. And that was his rule. Yeah. And if he didn't have that, he would have been out in the street. So it was a good thing he had done that. And so I think by design, certainly in any business I've built, I've tried to, at the very least, have lots of smaller customers rather than one big customer. I've tried to have multiple revenue streams rather than one revenue for those reasons, for what you're saying. But I love what you said because it also creates some distraction. What do I focus on today? Do I focus on sponsorship? Focus on merchandise? Do I focus on race revenue? I'm getting a little feedback. You guys hear me? Okay. Yeah. So, I would say it was by design. It's part of my ethos because of what happened with my dad. But it's also logical. I mean, if I've got 1.3 million people coming through our gates every year, and they're saying to me, "Hey, Joe, how do I eat? How do I train? What do I wear?" Of course, I should satisfy those needs.
Yeah, great. And I think I interviewed Ed Milet. We had a good time together. He's a great guy. And he said, what you do is you build one income stream and you focus on that. And then you find the kickoff revenue streams from that. That sounds like that's what you did. You built your race and then you've got the additional supplemental streams from it.
100%.
All right, cool. So you've been in business 20 years. You must have learned a load of stuff. So hit us with it all. What have you learned in business over 20 years?
Well, here's what I would say. When I was very young, my first business was started because my father was losing money and houses and things, my neighbor was the big boss of one of the organized crime families. And he saw this going on in my family. And he said, hey, why don't you clean my pool? I'll pay you $35 a week. And the most unlikely guy gave me some great lessons, which were, if you're going to show up at 8 o'clock, you better be here at 7:45, right? On time is late. Now we hear that in podcasts and books and social media these days, but like coming from this guy, it was a little more powerful.
Yeah.
number two is, if you're going to clean the swimming pool, you should also straighten up the lawn furniture and clean the shed, even though I'm not paying you for that, and make yourself invaluable as a service provider. So when I come home and I know you were here on a Saturday morning, I'm like, holy shit, this kid, he's unbelievable, right? He goes above and beyond. So I did that. And third, which may or may not make sense to you, he said, never ask for money. Don't have your hand out. A lot of people have their hand out and they're asking for money in advance of doing the job, or you just sense that as a potential customer. And he said, don't worry, you'll get paid. If you do a great job and you're invaluable and you show up on, like, you've already checked all those boxes, you will get paid. And by the way, if nobody pays you, I'll make sure you get paid. And there were many instances over the following 10 years where I had some issues with people and all I had to do was mention his name and I got paid. So those three were big lessons. And then when I went to Wall Street, you know, I think I took some of those neighborhood lessons to finance, and then expanded on them. And so, one way for the entrepreneurs out there to really crush, there's probably some restaurant in the town or city you live in that is impossible to get a table in, right? Like you just can't get a table there. And so you go to that restaurant and you start taking care of the maitre d', or whoever is out front. You get to know the owner. It might take a few months, and you make sure that you always can get a table at that restaurant. And whether you're impressing a banker because you need a loan for a building, right? Like if you've got a table at the hardest restaurant to get in, like you've got tremendous credibility and goodwill. So I did that in New York. That was a neighborhood thing that I was able to use for Wall Street. But then what I figured out was, okay, that's cool that I'm spending time with people that can pay me a lot of money, like customers at restaurants. But what if I do like hot yoga with them? What if I go run across a desert with them? What if we train together? And I quickly figured out that the bonds that I build with those people doing hard things are much, much tighter bonds than going to dinner or having some drinks. So, and then I used to tell, I had 50 traders on the trading desk. I created a laminated, I'd be arrested for it now, but I created a laminated piece of paper on how they could all become incredibly successful. And one of it was like, if you have customers that pay you a lot of money or can pay you a lot of money, and you're not with them on Thanksgiving or you're not with them on Christmas or the holidays, like your competitor probably is, right? Like you need to be with these clients 24/7 and be inseparable and become their best friend, and not in a superficial way, legitimately make them your, like our customers at that time could pay us $3 to $5 million a year, right? So like if you say to yourself, oh, well, this is family time. Okay. That's great. Then don't complain when you're not doing a lot of business. Your competitor is. Because if you're trying to do business with somebody that could pay you $3 to $5 million a year, you better be with them 24/7. So that was the big lesson coming out of Wall Street. And then in this business, I think the big lesson is authenticity. I think when I look at Spartan's competitors over time and why they failed and why we've continued to thrive, I think the fact that I wasn't doing it for money and I was really doing it to change lives comes out in the brand. And I think that's why people are attracted to this brand and have a great name.
Yeah.
Spend and figuring out the name of your business.
Yeah. Yeah. And Spartan's definitely a level up, isn't it, from Peak, if you think about just the word.
I mean, I know you guys over in your country love Richard Branson, but Spartan crushes Virgin.
Yeah, but Virgin, it does, but Virgin's still good.
Virgin's good, but I'm just saying Spartan's here, Virgin's here.
Yeah. I think I have to take the hat off to you on that one. Yeah. Cool. All right. So I've got one big question and then a few little quick fires. So we're probably coming towards the end, Joe, if that's okay. So how do you stay motivated? Everyone wants to know this. And what's your take on how do you stay motivated?
Yeah, number one question I get, Joe, how do you stay motivated? I'm not motivated. And I say to myself, you know, what would the average person do? I don't want to be average. That's it, right? Like I literally play that. Like I think people think, you know, there was this time I went to one of our death races down in Mexico and I showed up. It was like 11 o'clock at night with my flight and there was a fire going and my staff was around and there was a young, you know, 15-year-old kid who had heard of me and just wanted to be around it and wanted to meet me. And I stayed around the fire for about 30 minutes. I was like, guys, I'm exhausted. I'm going to bed. And apparently when I left that fire, the boy said to the folks working for us, like, oh my God, he's nothing like I thought. Like I thought he never sleeps. I thought he does burpees all the time. And so like, I'm just like everybody else. The only difference is, that I say to myself, like at those moments when I'm not feeling it, like what would the average person do? And I don't want to play average. I want to play, at an Olympic level.
Yeah. Great. Thank you. So, the best advice you've ever received, can you think of it?
I mean, the best advice I ever received that you might not be able to apply, to your life if you're listening or watching this, was to leave the neighborhood and to go to Manhattan and take a job in finance, which I guess the way you would apply that to your life is, to leave the shore. Don't be afraid to leave the shore and sail away. A lot of people are very trapped. They, you know, figuratively trapped. And you know, lots of great things happen. Listen, you might drown out there. You might not come back, but you'll have a good time for a while.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, Joe, because obviously social media makes it different now. But I was an artist before I got into sort of maybe real business, if you like. And I knew in my heart I needed to be in London because that's where all the art was and that's where all the art buyers were and the Russians were buying art like no tomorrow and all the, you know, the sort of modern artists, which is more my ilk. And I live in Peterborough, which is 55 minutes on the train. And I just didn't go to London because of fear and just stayed in my comfortable hometown. And I gave myself all these excuses why I didn't go to London. I didn't enter my art and competitions. It was 55 minutes on the train and I didn't even leave my city, and just because of my own ego maybe or whatever. And you saying that, just get out there,
leave the shore. You know, there's a comedian, I forget who it was, but like 20 years ago he would joke about, it's a terrible thing to joke about, but in Ethiopia, right, they didn't have much food, and he would say, I just don't get it, why don't they move to where the food is? And so if you're an artist or you're in the property business or whatever, why wouldn't you go to where all the people, like, go to where the business is?
Yeah. And it's easier now than it ever was, I think. Easier, quicker.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. What's the worst advice you've ever received?
Worst advice I ever received. That's a tough one. I guess I'm such an optimist. I don't even know if I've received.
You're thinking about this one.
I don't even know. I'm stumped actually with that one. Could we come back to that one? I got to think.
I like the ones that stump people. Someone said that to me once, Rob, I don't remember all the bad advice. So how would I know? And I thought that was quite a good answer. So, okay, we'll come back to that. We'll give you one more go.
Here's the worst advice I ever got was, I ended up in a Turkish prison, but that's not the one I was thinking of. But the one I was thinking of was, I was told by my staff and my team to shut Spartan down. Like, it was ridiculous. We were burning through too much money. And And that was the first bit of bad advice. And then fast forward a year or two, and I was wildly spending on digital advertising, wildly spending. And because I had a gut instinct, I didn't have any actual data. I didn't know what I was doing. And my entire team created a coup, and they were just going to all quit if I didn't stop spending, but I wouldn't stop. So I think it's it's hard when you're paving the way down a new road. It's hard for people around you to buy into it, and their instinct is to go the normal route, right? I think that was some advice.
And you got to tell us what this Turkish prison thing is that your wife just said. You can't leave us without that.
I went to Turkey. No, I'm sorry. It was where the fuck was I? Hungary. It was a Hungarian prison. I was in Hungary, I don't know, 20 years ago. And some of my buddies from Wall Street, we were all meeting there. And one of my friends was arriving 5 hours later. It was early morning. And we went to the Hungarian bathhouse, where it was supposed to be amazing. And these salt baths, and you get massages, the whole thing. And I got there, and don't forget, I had a background in cleaning swimming pools. So we went in there. I was like, this is terrible. Like, the water's dirty. Like, I'm not sitting in this place. So we left, and it was 8 o'clock in the morning. We were waiting for our final friend to fly in, and we had nothing to do. And so we stopped in this little bar restaurant. All of us ordered a beer. I don't even like beer. 45 minutes later, they gave us the tab, and they charged us like $100 a beer. And I said, I'm paying $100 a beer. and the waiter got in my face, and then the owner came over, and I said, I'm not paying it. Like, I'm not some idiot. And they locked the doors, literally locked us in the place. And some police showed up, and it was a scam, and they arrested us.
Wow.
They put us in prison. And they kept us there from, if it was 10 a.m., till about 10 p.m., about 12 hours. And my friend was begging me, can you just pay? Can we just please pay? we're not fucking paying. So ultimately they let us out. But that was, I don't know, there was no advice out there. That was an idiotic move on my part. Don't go to a Hungarian prison.
Right. I'm sensing, is there a bit of stubbornness sometimes in you, Joe? Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I mean, the stubbornness, right, kept the Spartan predecessor alive 15 years. So I'm definitely overly stubborn.
Yeah. Okay, so we got three more quick ones. Is there one thing in the world that you think is really wrong that you'd like to change?
Yeah, I'd really love to change this whole environmental thing. And I got to put my money where my mouth is. The plastics drive me nuts. I mean, we're not great at home at recycling. And I just read an article recently about some scientists from Australia went to an island off Australia, and they found 970,000 pairs of flip-flops that had washed ashore of this small island. 970,000 pairs of flip-flops.
Yeah.
So under the sand or whatever. So I think it's a train wreck, right? Yeah. This is a train. We got to solve that.
So this is a new one we're asking, just a bit of fun to figure it out, just to see who likes who and see where it goes. Is there one person you reckon I should ask to be a guest on this show? Is there someone that's inspired you, or just someone you think he'd be great for Rob's audience? Anyone you'd recommend?
Yeah, I would say first choice is Shackleton. You can get him out from the grave. Would be amazing.
Okay, I won't write him down then. Yeah.
And the second one is Barry Hearns. He's in your neck of the woods.
Barry Hearns, the boxing promoter.
Boxing promoter.
Yeah, we've already interviewed him.
Oh, he's the best.
He is fantastic. He's the biggest charmer. He was brilliant. Yeah, we've already got him.
Here, I got one for you. I got the equivalent of Barry Hearns in the U.S.
Yeah.
He's a very dear friend of mine. His name is Jimmy Binns, B-I-N-N-S. Okay, send me an email afterwards. I'll give you his phone. I don't want to give you his phone number online here.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. I appreciate that. All right, we'll check him out.
He's literally the American version of Ben's. And I'll give you the questions to ask him. He won't even know that I helped you out.
Game. I'm game. All right. And this podcast is called The Disruptive Entrepreneur. We like to find people who we think are interesting, disruptive. What does that word mean to you, disruptive?
I just think it's going against the grain, right? And I've been disruptive my whole life. I just naturally go against the grain. I guess it's too easy being a lemming, right?
Yeah.
To go the other direction.
And then you've got some tea there and some pills and some books. So what is it you'd like to promote at the moment? And then also, where should we follow you, Joe?
Or can you get the tea bag? I don't know where it is. Hang on. I'm going to get you the tea bag. I'm going to show you the tea. By the way.
What's the tattoo on your arm? Does that have a meaning?
That's my mom's. This actually for your audience. When I was on Wall Street, I was, when we go back to that laminated piece of paper on how to build relationships with your customers that are unbreakable, my message was, if your customer likes to play football, you play football. If your customer likes to ride motorcycles, you ride motorcycles. Like, that's the deal. If you want to get to the top level in that game. We were at an Italian restaurant in Florida. I hadn't done what I told everybody in your audience to do, which was I didn't have the ability to get a table on time. We were standing online trying to get in, which was embarrassing. It was costing me a little friction with the relationship. Next door, or a couple of stores down from this restaurant that we were trying to get into, was a tattoo parlor. My customer, having one too many drinks, said, "Hey, we're going to get tattoos." I had about 22 seconds to decide what I was going to get, because I was going to take a tattoo. So that's my mother's name in the Mandarin character. That was to help the business, but also it's cool that it's my mom's name on my arm. So ultimately, everybody won in that deal. My customer won, I won, and my mom.
That's a cool story. I like that. And yeah, what have you got? What are you promoting at the moment?
Yeah, so the tea, check this out. You go on our shop page, you'll find this tea. I think if you buy some, we make about 3 cents. So this is not a commercial enterprise. But this tea gets picked off the mountains of Sparta. And I only learned about it a year ago. And when I asked, like, what are they picking up there at 2,000 feet up in the mountains? And he said, here's a deal. For like 2,500 years, they've been picking this. This is Hippocrates and Socrates tea. And after they drank it, they would take the boiled leaves and rub it on their bruises and cuts. And it translates from Greek to English, and it says, "He is of iron." So I quickly said, we will take the entire year's supply of Spartan tea. We put it in bags and we get it out. We get it out to our community. So let me know if anybody wants any tea.
And where can we find that? What's the website?
Yeah, go to the Spartan Race shop page. I don't know exactly how to get there, but you guys have figured it out.
Yeah.
Check out this pill. This pill is basically the ground up tea we've been experimenting with. And because the idea is, when you kill a plant, when you boil it, when you cook it, it doesn't have the same nutrients as when it's raw. So this is ground up, fine powder, and it's unbelievable. Energy, focus. You can't buy these yet, but they're coming. And you're going to want some, because everybody in the office I've been giving these to is literally lining up. I need more pills. I feel like a deal.
Cool. And then where can we follow you on social media?
I go to Real Joe DeSena, follow me on Instagram. I held out for, as long as I could. I didn't want to do the whole social media thing personally. I was going to be the guy that chopped wood and carried rocks in the back. And, I don't know, 6 months ago, I set up an Instagram page, and, now I find myself doing videos, and apparently it's fun and cool. So.
Great. And Real as in RealJoeD.
DeSena.
And is that DISENA?
DESENA.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. And then you've got some books as well, haven't you? Is it Spartan Ups, one of them?
Yeah, Spartan Up was the first book, Spartan Fit, and Spartan Way. You could see the consistency there with the word Spartan. But all have done, knock on wood, all have done well. If anybody out there needs a book, I'm happy to give them a digital download. Not looking to steal share of wallet here. I just want people to start thinking like Spartans and getting ahead in life.
Great. Joe, I've had a lot of fun. I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you for giving us your time.
I had fun. We're going to do a big real estate gathering on the farm. It's going to be awesome.
I'm in. Yeah. All right. Cheers, Joe. Thank you.